So we're here this morning to remember the life, the death, and the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ in the manner in which he prescribed with bread and with wine. We know that the bread is a symbol of his body that was broken, the flesh and its desires overcome, both figuratively and literally, crucified on the cross, and the wine the symbol of the perfect life that he lived in obedience, right up to the point where he gave that life for all of us. We'll consider a small portion of that life this morning, with the record of Zacchaeus, and also the record of the parable of the 10 minas or minas, and also the maybe pounds, depending on which version you're reading out of. So we start off with this guy Zacchaeus, and his name means pure, and we're told that he was a chief publican in Jericho. Now, likely, if he's a chief publican in Jericho, it could mean that he was like a customs agent, and he would collect on the shipping that happened and the trade that happened there, and likely he had other tax collectors who were working for him because he was the chief. One of the historians wrote that perhaps Jericho was a center for balsam, and apparently balsam is very expensive. And so this would have been a very prestigious, high-paying role that came with a lot of power for him to control this balsam trade in Jericho. So at the beginning of this story, then, we're introduced to a small, rich, very powerful man with the desire to see Jesus, who he was, as it reads in the King James. This phrase, see Jesus, who he was, is a bit cryptic, but I think with the benefit of hindsight here, the who he was is really more than just a passing interest in seeing Jesus, his physical appearance, but it's also about learning about who Jesus was, having the opportunity to hear him and understand what all this was about, this man that he was hearing about, this great prophet. And so in order to get a view of Jesus and presumably get within earshot, Zacchaeus finds a sycamore tree because he's unable to get close enough because of his stature to see and hear the Lord. The sycamore tree here is not the same sycamore tree that we would find here here locally. It's a little different, and it's actually a fig tree. It's different also than the shorter summer fruit-bearing tree, fig tree that's typically used to represent Israel. This fig tree is typical in the Near East, and Jericho is kind of the place where it has a climate where you would expect to find this type of sycamore tree. It's significant because it produces fruit a couple of times a year, but it's not near as nice a fruit as its shorter cousin that produces fruit only once a year. And so this fruit was typically used to feed pigs. Poor people ate this, and the wood of it was also used by poor people to build their homes instead of the nicer cedar. So basically, you have this, you know, the symbol of this rich man, rich in the things of this world, but in a tree, which spiritually poor, surrounded by a spiritually poor tree, right? So you have this symbol of someone who was lacking the spiritual side of things, who was poor, but who had great riches in this world. So immediately, as Jesus arrives at the tree, he calls out to Zacchaeus and invites himself to Zacchaeus' house. And Zacchaeus receives him immediately and joyfully, but the people around are upset because they say, you know, Zacchaeus, he's a sinner. So we're going to draw a couple of points here from just that little section there. And then we'll move into the parable of the minas and the pounds. And I think they're linked, and we'll look at kind of my idea of how I think they're linked. I think it's interesting and very applicable for us. So the first lesson that I like to draw from these verses is the way that Christ interacts with Zacchaeus. A lot of times, I've heard people who are Christadelphian talk about the world, and they use that term sort of as a blanket term to apply to anybody who's not a Christadelphian. In the Bible, often we see it used to describe people who have embraced the flesh and its desires. And so if you look at this idea of saying, well, everybody who's not a Christadelphian is the world, it becomes tricky because it raises the question of, well, aren't we meant to preach to all the world as well? And so if you say, well, we're meant to remain separate from everybody in the world, and we're meant to preach to everybody in the world, you have a bit of a contradiction there. But I think Jesus' example really really clears this up for us, because what you have is Jesus interacting and being part of the world, but not embracing the flesh and its desires. So we see that, you know, Jesus associated with this sinner, quote unquote, because this sinner had a genuine interest in Jesus and his teachings. You know, we see this sort of as a model for ourselves. The instruction not to befriend the world is not meant to restrict our contact with the people we live around, but from spending time with those who have embraced the flesh. Jesus did not go out tax collecting was Zacchaeus to build a relationship with him, right? Jesus, through his example and through his teachings, drew Zacchaeus to himself. And it's the same for us. If we're consistently trying to live a godly life, we will have interaction with people who are not Christadelphian, who are not Christians, right? But we will draw people to us who are interested in why we're living the way we're living. And if we're really trying to live a godly life, we will be repelled from people who have chosen to serve and follow the flesh. We won't want to spend time with them. And so it's not really about being a Christian or being a Christadelphian or not. It's about doing God's will and letting those who would like to be part of that come to us. The second lesson I'd like to draw from these verses is this idea of Zacchaeus' response. So we see that Zacchaeus immediately climbs out of the tree and that he's joyful. So consider for a moment that Christ has extended the same invitation to us. He has invited himself into each of our homes. And consider, just on an average day, are we immediately heeding his call and joyfully heeding that invitation for him to come into our home? I know for myself, oftentimes I find myself too, quote-unquote, busy, and I miss out on that time that Christ has asked to invite himself into my home. And I end up doing things that are not spending time with Christ. And they're usually just meaningless things, you know, stuff that, looking back, it's really like, why would I do that when Jesus has invited himself into my house to spend time with me? You know, our home should really be places where we fill ourselves with the Word of God and with prayer and talking amongst the members of our family about how this great calling that we have motivates us and moves us and, you know, what things we can do to show that love. The next thing we see in the verses is that Zacchaeus goes all the way with his response. So not only does he immediately and joyfully accept Christ into his home, but he gives half of his possessions to the poor. And then he returns anything that he's defrauded, he returns at four times, a level of four times. And so we see that he actually has a fairly good knowledge of the law. In Exodus 22, there's different penalties for when you defraud somebody, depending on what you've defrauded them for. And there's different levels that you would compensate them for, depending on what it was. This is actually the second highest compensation that you could select out of the law. And it's in reference to sheep. If you had taken someone's sheep, you would give back four sheep. And so not only does Zacchaeus promise to give half of his wealth to the poor, but he picks out for himself one of the most strict interpretations of the law as to what he should restore to people whom he defrauded. So he was really going all the way here. So I think that's, you know, a real lesson there that he chose for himself out of the different list of things that he could have chosen. He chose the most, or the second most strict. The third lesson I would like to look at is these people who say, oh, Jesus went to spend time with a sinner, right? And they had made this judgment call about Zacchaeus, and they had labeled him a sinner. And they were really unable to give him a chance to be anything else but the sinner that they had labeled him as. So, and I think, really, for us, this is an easy trap to fall into with our dealings with others. It makes things much simpler if we can just put someone in a box and make some assumptions about them and not have to really think too hard about it. But we know that Jesus obviously didn't do that. But if he had, Zacchaeus would never have been converted, and this chance would have been missed. And so I think, you know, it's important for us to make sure that we don't, as these people did to Zacchaeus, that we don't make superficial judgments about people. We don't put people in boxes and just sort of, you know, well, they are this or that and label them, right? But I think the important part about that, it's easy to say, but the important part about that is it requires two things. It requires love and it requires time. If we love and care about somebody, we're going to be much more likely to want to give them the benefit of the doubt. We're not going to want to have them in a box. We're going to want to believe the best about that person. And that love is going to spur us to ask questions, to talk to them, to find out what their motivations are, what they're going through, to get them out of that box, and that's going to require time and patience. Right? So those two things have to be constants in our dealings with each other, is this love that we should feel for each other and giving each other the benefit of the doubt, putting the best motivations and the best possible thought for what we might be doing on each other, and then, you know, asking questions and really being involved in each other's lives, taking that time to see that through. So we'll move into the next couple verses here. And I think there's a link here between the parable of the 10 minas, or the pounds, and this story of Zacchaeus. And the reason I think that is because the wording in verse 11, it says, in the beginning of verse 11, it says, as they heard these things, he proceeded to tell a parable. And that immediately follows the previous verse where Jesus says, salvation this day has come this day to the house of Zacchaeus, and that he had come to save those who were sinners, to save that which was lost. So this seems like it happens right at the same moment. As Jesus is talking to the house of Zacchaeus, his disciples that are with him, and then he gives this parable. I think, and this is a bit of a conjecture, but I think one plausible explanation for Zacchaeus' interest in Jesus is that perhaps he thought the time of the end was near. The time of the final judgment was at hand. And so he thought, I really need to think about how I'm behaving, right? And we see that Jesus' reason for giving it is because he was near to Jerusalem and because they supposed that the kingdom of God was to appear immediately. And so, you know, a lot of times I've heard that apply just to the disciples, but perhaps it also applied to Zacchaeus. And perhaps that was what spurred Zacchaeus to be really interested in Jesus and to be really concerned about the path in life that he had chosen. And so if that's the case, I think this entire series of events is really interesting for us. We believe that we're in the last days, the days immediately preceding the return of Christ. And so we bear a lot of similarities to Zacchaeus in at least one sense, that, you know, we have this time of the end coming upon us, right? We believe that Christ's return is soon and that the final judgment will happen. So, and the interesting thing about that is that was the catalyst for Zacchaeus' actions and for his interest in Jesus, at least initially. We see that Jesus didn't reprimand him for that, and it wasn't a bad thing. But Jesus follows it with this parable, and this parable is all about following through, right? Continuing to be consistent in the work of Jesus, not just, oh, wow, I'm really kind of, you know, shocked and a little worried right now because I see things happening. That's okay, right? That got Zacchaeus there, but Jesus says that's not enough. It's not enough to just have this sort of moment of truth that we have and then sort of let the daily life, the daily grind erode away at that recognition and that commitment that we felt. So Jesus exhorts in this parable that we must engage in business, his business, until I come. So what exactly does that mean? I think the key to that is, what are the 10 minas or the 10 pounds, right? Because that's the business, that's what Jesus gives his servants, or the master in this parable gives his servants to do business with. And I think if you look at, in this particular case, the talents, the minas or the pounds are exactly the same that he gives to all of his servants, which is a bit of a contrast to some of the other parables that have similar structure. But in this case, I think it's really just the gift of love that God and Jesus have given. And it's the gospel message that really is the 10 minas that we're meant to work with here as servants of Christ or as servants of the master in this parable. It's that invitation to be part of God's family. So if this is what we understand the minas to be, or the pounds, then we are engaged in the business of God's love and of his gospel. And this can only mean, of course, that we're engaged in showing others the love of God and in sharing with them that invitation to be part of his family. So it's pretty clear that there's a couple of different ways that you would see the fruit of this labor. As we see sort of people's minas in the parable, they return to them 10 minas. One of the most powerful, I think, is right here at the Ecclesia. You know, if we're engaged in the business of God's love and the business of sharing that message with each other and encouraging each other, we're going to have a strong ecclesial family. We're going to be looking for ways to serve each other, to show God's love to each other. And even more than that, we're going to be looking for ways to build each other up, to help each other be better servants, to help each other on that walk. And the other obvious fruit of that labor of love, if you will, is that people around us will be attracted and will have the opportunity to accept God's invitation to be part of that family. And I think both of those are just really, really great, and really what you end up with as a result of being part of the business, being involved and engaged in the business of God's love, is a benefit to everyone who's around us, really. It's also clear from the parable that there's no excuse for inaction. We see that this last servant has some excuse where, depending on what version you read, and I think it reads really well. What version is this that I have? NASB, I think. I think it reads well here. He says, Jesus, or the master says to him, by your own words I will judge you, you worthless slave. Did you know that I am an exacting man, taking up what I did not lay down and reaping what I did not sow? And there's a question mark there. So I think what we have there is this misunderstanding by this servant of the true character of his master. And his master said, well, if you really thought I was like that, why wouldn't you at least have done something? Right? So there's no real excuse here. Even that, even this misunderstanding where the guy says, well, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing. Jesus doesn't even, or the master in this case, doesn't accept that, right? There is no excuse for inaction. You know, reading from James, with the faith without works is dead, is not simply enough in the case of this parable to say, I understand the love of Jesus and I believe in it, but not to show it to anyone else. The master in this case, and God and Christ in our case, require that we emulate that love and show forth his character to everyone that we come in contact with. So as we begin to turn our thoughts to this memorial before us, I hope that we're able to draw some lessons and strength for the week to come from the example of Zacchaeus and the example of how Jesus works with him. We, like Zacchaeus, live at a time when the final judgment is near. You know, if you read the news, you look at Israel and Palestine are having, you know, great talks again, and there's a lot of goodwill and good vibe around this time. You know, a lot of people, if you look, I don't know if any of you guys, this is a little sidebar, but there's this cool PowerPoint presentation that comes out by email. You can sign up for it. And this guy looks at the news every week and sort of says, you know, here's what happened, here's why it's insignificant, and then he has a Bible verse that goes along with whatever it is to kind of link it in. But it's really kind of cool. If you're interested in it, let me know afterwards. I can send you a link. But I enjoy it most weeks, so it's pretty interesting. But at any rate, I mean, looking at what's going on, you see, you know, you see the words peace and safety in a lot of these guys' speeches, right? So if Netanyahu or whoever the guys are that are in control, they're up giving a speech and they'll say peace and safety, peace and safety. And, you know, this guy that sends out the email highlights it in each one of the things. But, you know, we're hearing these exact words that are straight from the Bible around what people would be talking about, right? And then you have this sort of other nation that's to the north of Israel that said, we don't believe that Israel should exist, right? And they're developing nuclear weapons, and they've got all of that technology and know-how from a nation that's further to the north, Russia, right? And so you have this sort of power in the north that's threatening and starting to build up its ability to destroy Israel, and that's their stated purpose, right? And so we know that that's all part of what happens in the prophecy that God gave via Ezekiel about the last times. And so we're in this sort of this same situation that Zacchaeus found himself in, where he said, ah, Christ is here. The final establishment of the kingdom and judgment must be soon, right? And so we're in that same situation. And I think there's nothing wrong with having that be a motivation. God's left those things for us to be a sign, to wake us up, to keep us attentive. But Jesus' instruction is clear that it's not enough to just get temporarily shocked into a way of thinking about things and a way of life, and then, you know, slowly sort of erode out of that and forget about that. He says that if we look at this, the wording of the parable, we're expected to engage in the business of God's love. I think that's kind of cool. I don't know. I don't think the King James reads that way. I think it was the ASV that I was reading, but I liked the way that read. And so we have the perfect example of Christ, who engaged in the business of God's love his entire life. And at the end of his life, he gave his life for all of us. So I pray that the love and the 10 minas that we've all been given will yield its fruit, and that by the grace and love of our God, that we'll all find a place in that kingdom when it returns.